You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who never leaves the house without wearing a cup, Pete Chwaba.
It's true, folks. Welcome back to Nightlight. Act 3 is officially underway. If you missed hour number 1 or 2, they are available in podcast form at civicmedia.us. We had a lot of fun talking about a guy at my gym who had a sock stuck to the inner butt part of his workout pants and apparently had no idea. And it started my day off with a huge laugh, and I've been chuckling about it ever since, so I am in a phenomenal mood today. Aaron Zomers is producing the show. How do you think it's going, Aaron? Have we made any kind of radio history today?
I don't know about radio history, but we've certainly made an impression, a sock-shaped impression, perhaps.
It's not too late either. We still got an hour. Lenny Schmidt's here. We got Matt Miller coming up. It's going to be a lot of fun, folks. You're here on a great night. Our question of the night in honor of National Inventors Day is, what is the greatest invention in your opinion? You can let us know at 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC if you're listening on the Civic Media app. We are on statewide, so just tap the little icon next to the station you're listening on and let us know. If you're watching the radio on YouTube, Facebook, or X, drop us a stream comment and I'll read it on the radio. Be part of the show. It's always more fun when you guys participate. Okay, so Lenny Schmidt is here. Very funny comedian and very talented actor. My internet cut out. I don't know what happened. We lost a couple minutes with Lenny, so we asked him to stick around and give us a few more minutes after the news, and he is here from Los Angeles over the stream, but headed, where are you headed, Len? To a boat, right?
Yeah, I'm getting back on a, it's a ship, man. You got to call it a ship. They get really uptight if you call it a boat. I don't care, but if a captain will literally scream at you. So it's a ship. I'm going to Cozumel. I'll be in Cozumel tomorrow morning and get on the Carnival Mardi Gras.
So the weather in Los Angeles isn't nice enough. You have to go further south.
Yeah.
And make it even better.
Well, yeah. Good for you. Well, I was telling Aaron before when we lost you for like 2 minutes, I end up doing these ships, but some of them are out of the East Coast, and I forget that we're coming back to the East Coast. Like, they have ships going out of Norfolk, and I don't know why. Because the first 2 days of the ship on Norfolk, the ship is like 40 degrees.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Area. So I always forget because they go, I'm getting on a cruise ship, and I just pack, you know, my my shorts, my trunks, my tank tops, my flip flops, and they land in New Orleans. Oh, it's cold here. It's terrible.
Welcome to my world. Hey, okay, so Len, tell us about this great, you know, we'll get to some of your other shows. You got some great credits, but you also did a short film directed by a mutual friend of ours, Al Alter, called Some Kind of Joke. And a lot of our friends were in it, Steve Seeger, Jimmy Pardo, just a great cast. You play a bartender. You kind of are the glue that holds the whole thing together. And folks, check out this film. It's called Some Kind of Joke. It is available on YouTube. It's about, what, 10 minutes, Len? But it's just a great piece of work.
It's easy to find. You can go to YouTube. You go, and it's on my website. It's our guys have it everywhere. I didn't know you weren't in that. Like, every Chicago guy in the world was in that thing.
I don't know what I did to, you know, I thought people kind of liked me, but apparently I went through a phase where I first moved to LA.
You were out there, right? I think you were out there before I was, because we shot that right when I first moved to LA. So this had to be 99-ish, right around there.
Yeah, I got out there in 97. But yeah, I don't know. But whatever. Yeah, I was cheering everybody on.
We shot it in 2 days. Dude, it was so much fun. It was 2 days. And I'm basically, as the bartender, I'm the straight man to every bar joke. You know, every bar joke is me. In one shot, Mark Unger is like dead peeing on me in that joke. And then there's a duck. And there, I mean, every bartender joke where I'm going, what's that supposed to be? We literally played everything out. And the premise of the movie is simple. A guy walks into a bar, and then there's no one better to write that movie than Steve and Al. They were perfect for it. And it was basically every bar joke in the world played out in front of your eyes, and Steve is the guy that walks into it. It was so much fun. We shot it in two days. I don't know if you know the story about it. There's a scene where Graham Elwood is standing next to he's the 6-inch pianist. He's right. The little mini guy on the bar, right? So he's the little bitty 6-inch pianist. So two years later, we're talking about this. And Hammer had mentioned how much money he spent on that effect. He goes, I spent so much money on that effect. I had to use my credit card. It was like a lot of money. And someone goes, why didn't you just have Graham stand next to a giant inflatable Budweiser can? And it looked like you sucked the life out of Hammer's face.
Hammer is Al Alter, the director of the film, and the nickname is fantastic. He's like a short, funny Jewish guy. Not the guy you think would have the nickname Hammer, but just such a great guy and did such a great job. And I think he loves his nickname, too, for what it's worth.
It's a perfect nickname for him because he's the exact opposite of the Hammer. He's just this little, short, quiet, nice, sweet, it's a really great guy, very even keel. I don't think I've ever seen Hammer raise his voice in 30 years, that I've known him.
Right.
It's just a mellow dude, man. So,
yeah, I think
it was so much fun shooting.
I think I'm like the only person in the world that doesn't like him, which is strange, but that's still a pretty good track record. So Lenny Schmidt is here. Len, we have a few more minutes. Tell us about, you got such great credits. You did all this like Castle and Desperate Housewives. And what was your best experience on a set?
True Blood. That was probably that was fun, man.
Oh, you kind of cut out there. What did you say? Was it True Blood?
True Blood show on HBO. That would be cool. I had to get a full costume, so I went to the studio, the big costume place in the Valley that has the John Wayne wing.
Yeah.
Have you ever been over there? There's like a whole John Wayne wing, which is everything John Wayne ever wore. But I was wearing vintage 1920s tux. I was dressed like a mob boss, and it's an opening scene of me in a party having a party, and the closing scene is me and the Bill who plays. Or Steven, who plays Bill, and then have sex in our butt. But it's the most. They snapped my neck. I mean, there was just so much involved. When the shoot was over, I was covered in fake blood from head to toe. I had all these bites all over my body, like these fake things, and it was just the coolest. It was just the coolest thing ever, man. At the time, it was the biggest, number one show on HBO. It was a big deal. It was really cool. But and they were great. Everybody was on the cast, and they invited me to the wrap party afterwards. We had a good time. So I think that was probably the best one. When I got my neck snapped, I laid there and watched my wife kind of die, and she was perfect. She acted so well. Because back one of the things they explained to me on that shoot is when they do blood shooting, or at least at the time when they had to do blood shooting from a body, they had to do it by hand, because if they used a machine, it looked too mechanical. So if you did it by hand, there were actual people that paid that were called blood pumpers or whatever, and they had a way of doing it to make it look like it was a real heartbeat. So there was a guy off screen with a bucket of blood pumping blood through a tube that was coming out of her neck that had to look like she was really getting eaten alive. So it was just a really cool thing to watch and learn how they do that type of shot.
That's fantastic. Hey,
of course,
buddy,
AI probably does all that.
Yeah, really. Safe travels, Len. This has been a lot of fun. I've been trying to get you on the show for a while now. I know you're a busy guy. I really appreciate your time, and I hope we get to do it again soon.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, man. Take care.
You got it. Lenny Schmidt, folks. Check out LennySchmidt.com and Google Some Kind of Joke. It's a short film shot in black and white, very stylistic, very cool. Lenny is the main character in that as well. And like I made a Pete pick in my Hollywood Beats, Southland is a really good show. Episode 1 of season 2. Check it out. Zomers, how are we doing?
Doing good. It looks like we have our next guest here if we want to bring him in.
What? That is fantastic news. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for sticking with us through some technical issues. We got them all worked out, I believe. And we kept Lenny for a few extra minutes. So our guest now is one of our faves. He joins us from Milwaukee over the stream. He does great work reviewing films there. Check out his A Man About Film Substack. And we always love talking to him here on Nightlight. Mr. Matt Miller. Hey, buddy, how are you?
That's my stage name, Technical Issues. It's not catching
tech,
on.
Tech for short. We'll do our best to help you spread that around, Matt.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. How are you tonight?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very well. It's almost vaguely warm outside, so yeah. That's exciting. I'm still braced for the inevitable April snow shower, but, you know, that's the life we've chosen in the wonderful state of Wisconsin. I wouldn't trade it for anything else.
Well, that makes one of us. no, but better April than June, too. That's what I say. Like, we make Wisconsin our home, and we roll with the bad weather, and that's just what we do. So
if it snows in June, then we know the day after tomorrow is breaking out. We know Roland Emmerich is showing up.
Great point. Hey, Matt, our question of the night is it's National Inventors Day. And so our question of the night is, what is your favorite invention? So if you don't have one at the ready, that's fine. Think it over, and maybe we can come back after a break and get it. But give that some thought.
I'll be obvious and easy. Like the invention of film, the invention of a film projector. I think those are pretty critical to the things that I love in life and the things that mean a lot to me. I think those are pretty tremendous things, and I'm glad somebody invented them. Sorry to be stereotypical.
No, I thought
like that, but yeah,
I thought you might say
invented the first film. Cheers to you, sir.
Who I'll is that? Who's the first? Is it Birth of a Nation? What's the actual first movie?
No. it wasn't Méliès.
I gotta look that up.
That time, I don't know.
Well, that's the first movie I remember in college. We studied
the Lumiere brothers. They're oftentimes credited. Méliès and Lumiere look like Lumiere's brothers. Looks like those are kind of the earliest ones. I'm sure all the like super cinephiles listening to this right now are just raging at me because I'm sure I have missed. I'm hot off an Orange Theory session, so I'm sweaty and exhausted. So my apologies. My film history is not coming right to me.
Wait, what are you hot off of?
Orange Theory. It's like a workout thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying
to not die, and that's okay. How I'm trying.
Listen, if you almost are killed during a workout session, my guess is it's going to help you shed a few pounds at the very least. So, Méliès, all right, I got to check that out. And it's probably the only film that has not been remade yet by Hollywood as well, unless it has been, and I just don't know about it.
I think Fantastic Voyage may have been remade. I think that's a Méliès movie, which actually the Oriental Theater in Milwaukee recently did a like live screening of like a special Georges Méliès like marathon where they like gathered together 12 of his short films and projected them with people playing scores live with the movies, and that's a really cool thing. I love what the Oriental does in terms of their screenings, and I will say to bring it to the Oscars and bring it to current movie stuff, if you're trying to complete your screenings, The Voice of Hind Rajab, international film nominee, that's going to be showing there this weekend, so make sure to check that out at the Oriental Theater.
All right, we are coming right back after a very short break, folks, with Matt Miller. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
What is that?
More 90s music. It's Britney Spears.
Yeah, okay. She's not that innocent. I'm not that innocent. Hey, welcome back, folks. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. We are jamming through hour three here on a Tuesday night, talking about the things we love to talk about and the things that bring us together, movies and Super Bowl commercials, with our guest, the very talented Matt Miller, who joins us over the stream from Milwaukee. Matt, we'll get to some movies as usual, but what was your take? Tell us what you thought about the game, the Super Bowl, and then the commercials.
I can kind of across the board say the Super Bowl game and the commercials, pretty rough. Will say the game itself lived down to your expectations for a Drake May versus
Sam Darnold,
you know, matchup. It reminded me a lot, looking back, to the Giants-Ravens Super Bowl. I believe that was 2001, where it was like a big blowout. The Giants couldn't do anything. But at least that Super Bowl, like, the Ravens defense was so interesting and imposing. And, you know, whereas this Super Bowl, there was just the fact that we were really excited for a kicker to maybe win MVP kind of tells you everything you need to know about the game. And then I think I gotta call time of death on the Super Bowl being an ad showcase. I think it has been several years now of underwhelming, you know, overpriced, overhyped ads that underdeliver during the game itself. And I think I'm done with it. I think when next year comes around, I'm gonna be like, nah, I'm done playing this game of the ads being exciting. We can talk through them again. No one's doing anything that interesting in these ads anymore.
We talked a little bit about that earlier in the show, and I equated it to, like, I think they're trying too hard. They're trying to be clever, trying to be just overtly funny, and it's just not working. Like, when, I don't know when this started, maybe early 2000s, when people absolutely had to watch the commercials. There was probably due to the fact that there were three or four great ones. And then everybody's been trying to emulate that. It's not working. I agree with you. It's way overdone.
I think there's two big causes of death here. One of them is all of these brands really want maximum exposure for their ads. So they focus more on getting famous names into their ads than coming up with a funny premise or something, you know, clever. And so, like, the formulas of these are two celebrities and then a third one shows up, or look, it's these people reenacting, you know, that movie you love in the past. It all just feels really formula, and they spend so much money getting these actors and not enough time actually giving them something funny to say. And then you add in the fact that they do all this de-aging and all this CG and AI in some cases, and it looks bad and it's not that fun. And then you add in the fact that, you know, we saw so many of these ads a week ago already. All of these companies want to get ahead of the Super Bowl and want to get into the articles getting written a week in advance of, like, ooh, these are the spots you'll see. So when the Super Bowl comes and the ad plays, either A, we don't watch it during the commercial because, you know, we've already seen it, we tune it out, or B, it's a worse shortened version of a longer commercial that you have to go to the YouTube for or to go to a website to, and I'm not gonna do that. So it's kind of multi-death by a thousand axe blows.
Does anybody do that? I mean, look at, we're in the age of, you know, everybody's on their phones, the attention span is zero. Who's gonna watch an ad? Maybe an older person, but who else would watch an ad on TV and go, oh, I got to log on to ABC.com or whatever it is and find out how this ends? Well, that seems so early 2000s. Who's doing that?
It really does. And then you go to these YouTube, like the Dunkin' Donuts one with Ben Affleck, and that ad is like 3 to 4 minutes long. That's a full-on short film they made.
Brutal.
And it's like, well, you only had 30 seconds. Like, what were we doing here? And I think you have bummers like the Pringles ad with Sabrina Carpenter and the Benson Boone, Ben Stiller one, where the long versions are actually pretty funny, but for the Super Bowl, they cut out the timing. They cut out the better jokes And the result was a mediocre 30-second spot that I didn't want to see more of afterwards. So it was a rough game, and I think a rough day for Ed. The one standout, I will say, was the trailer for The Adventures of Cliff Booth, the Once Upon a Time in Hollywood spinoff that Netflix is doing, written by Quentin Tarantino and directed by David Fincher. I did not know that trailer was coming. That movie's been in the works, and it was a real like, well, we'll see if this actually comes to fruition. And apparently it is. Apparently they are actually making this thing, and it looks, I mean, Fincher and Tarantino together, that could be quite the movie.
I am way too excited about that movie. I missed the Cliff Booth trailer during the game.
Oh, no.
And then I've since forgotten to look it up online until you just said that. I'm like, oh yeah, like I'm excited about that. Like, one of my favorite Tarantino films isn't really a Tarantino film, but it's True Romance that he wrote. Similar situation here. I really like that film, and I have probably too high expectations for the Cliff Booth.
Yeah, and Tarantino's doing this weird thing right now where he's like, I'm only going to make one more movie.
Yeah.
And as a result, he's given himself like writer's block. He's given himself like artist block because he wants to make sure his final movie is the best movie he's ever made. And it's like, just make movies, dude. Like, no one's keeping score, really. Like, just make more than one movie if you don't want to end on that movie. It's so strange.
Just make more movies and stop ripping on Paul Dano. I mean, give the guy a break. What is all that?
Weird week that was when he decided to be like, you know who's bad at life? Paul Dano. And
it's like,
I think Paul Dano kind of does exactly what he's supposed to do in There Will Be Blood. I don't know what the problem is here.
Absolutely.
He's supposed to be a worm.
All right, Matt Miller is here, folks. Milwaukee film critic. Follow him. Check out his work at A Man About Film on a Substack. He does great work there, and he does great work here. We love talking movies with him, and we're going to talk about some movies after the news here. It's Pete Schwabe and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Is on a 90s kick. Is that because of the list?
Yep. You know, we're talking about bad things in the 90s. Well, it's
great,
you know,
list.
I'm not saying this is bad. I'm saying
love 90s music.
Just about the 90s.
Welcome back. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is Nightlight. My guest right now is one of our Nightlight besties, Mr. Matt Miller. He reviews films and is based in the great city of Milwaukee. And we always love when he is here to talk movies with us. Okay, so we covered the Super Bowl. We covered the halftime show. Zomers and I were talking about this, Matt. Were you at the point where when there was no touchdown scored or when it was a shutout, you were just kind of hoping the game would get worse, like watching a bad show or something? Like, let's just see how bad this can go.
Because you kind of gave up hope. There was a hope of like, let's go all in. Let's get like a 24-0 game. Let's throw a safety in there. Let's do no touchdowns, all field goals. It was kind of a like, let's just, you know, Elmo with the apocalypse behind him meme this thing.
Right.
We were very close to popping a bottle of champagne when the first touchdown scored. That desperate for genuine excitement and points.
And I think it probably has to be better than the Super Bowl that you talked about with the Ravens, because Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl ring. And, you know, tip of my hat to him, gritty guy, grinder, you know, but man, not maybe the worst quarterback ever to have a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, it's a strange year. I think it was a strange Super Bowl for a strange football year where, you know, you've got the Tom Brady's and the Aaron Rodgers's of the world. That kind of era of quarterback is moving out. And you've got this new, you know, you've got the Pat Mahomes and the, you know, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson. And this felt like a season where, you know, that new guard was going to step up. And none of them did due to injury or a lack of success. And as a result, you get a Super Bowl with, you know, frankly, a rookie who looked like a rookie and a guy who I think is a good quarterback, but a game manager like Sam Darnold is Joe Flacco 2.0, you know, and there's nothing wrong with being Joe Flacco 2.0. But I don't know how excited I am to watch more Sam Darnold football.
Exactly. I was happy he kind of redeemed himself, you know, but yeah, you're right. He's a game manager at best.
That was the closest thing we had to a fun narrative this year was the middle finger to Minnesota Vikings Super Bowl, basically.
All right, so movies, Matt. Send Help. This is a Sam Raimi film starring Dylan O'Brien and Rachel McAdams. I saw it as well. My wife and I saw it in the theater. Good reviews for audiences and critics. What was your take?
I had such a good time. I just spiked my phone into the ground. I really enjoyed Send Help. It's really fun to watch Sam Raimi get to like go back into his element, kind of in maybe not all the way Evil Dead mode, because I don't think the studio would let him go all Evil Dead again. But he's at least in Drag Me to Hell mode, where he's like having fun, doing gross, fun, weird stuff. He's being like, listen, this is a gross scene. I think it needs more snot. I think it needs more blood. I think it needs more puke. I think Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien are exactly on the right wavelength of what this movie is. I think they're both really fun. I think it lives up to its really good premise. I had a hoot and a holler in watching it. I hope you did too.
I did. I thought it was, he kept you guessing, like, you know, without doing a spoiler, it's not totally what it seems during the ads, but it's close to that. But you kind of are wondering who you root for eventually throughout the course of the film. And kind of a misery thing, although misery was more overt, but I agree with you. It's Sam Raimi, like 1 second, there's a skeleton popping out of nowhere over someone's shoulder. I'm like, wait a minute, this is the first, it was such a tangential thing, but it worked and I loved it.
Just Sam Raimi cramming in gremlins and deadites wherever he can. And like anytime he can go weird and gross in a moment, he's gonna. It was really nice because he hasn't really directed much over the past 15 years.
Right.
Drag Me to Hell was 2010, I believe. And then it was Oz the Great and Powerful, a movie that does not exist. And then it was Doctor Strange, which some parts of that movie feel very Sam Raimi. Those are the fun parts. And then other parts of that movie, you can feel the Marvel cinematic apparatus like grabbing the wheel from him and being like, all right, we got some business to do. So it was fun to see him do a movie that kind of just lets him off the chain and be like, we're going to make a twisted, weird kind of office dynamic survivor movie.
Totally. The real question I have, so it's a Sam Raimi movie. Is Bruce Campbell in it?
I won't spoil it. He is technically.
Okay. All right. Really? That's all I need to know.
Yes. There's an early scene, and I will say just keep an eye in the background of some important artwork.
Will do.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I did not notice that, Matt. Good eye. Oh,
yeah,
that's great.
It's a fun little, even Bruce still got in there.
Bruce Campbell's great and a legend. All right, so that's Send Help. We both totally recommend that. Go more by what Matt says than me, but I really enjoyed it as well. Matt, what about Shelter? This did not play up here in Marinette at our little Cineplex, but it's a Jason Statham film that you kind of feel like you've read the logline before, not groundbreaking, but it got good reviews.
100%. This is the main character's name might as well be Basin Jorn. Like he's basically, you know, it's basically what if Jason Bourne and what if John Wick and what if every Jason Statham movie put into a blender. And I am not above enjoying that. You know, it's very trite. It's very derivative. But listen, Jason Statham's very good at playing gruff former assassins who have a secret soft spot and are really good at hitting dudes in the head with pipes. And I think Shelter delivers on that. The guy who made it is a guy named Rick Romanois, who's kind of like developed into a good kind of B-movie pulp guy. He directed the Gerard Butler disaster movie Greenland.
Mm, okay.
And he's kind of really good at making, you know, B-movies that are a little bit better than you expect them to be. And so that's kind of what Shelter is. It's, if you're expecting anything groundbreaking, you are in the wrong theater. But if you are wanting to see just a classic early year, like action movie that delivers Jason Statham punching dudes in the face, have I got the ticket for you? Apparently not in Marinette, but anywhere
That movie was tailor-made for the Marinette crowd, and myself included. I couldn't believe it wasn't here.
In fairness, it's a small new distributor. If you remember the Sydney Sweeney boxing movie that flops through the floor, it's this Black Bear studio that's trying to become a new distributor. And so they're getting off the ground, and obviously it's a little rocky right now, but I'm happy to see people did show up for it. You know, it's performing about as well as the Melania doc. So, I mean.
Well, this movie, Shelter, and there's certain movies where the tomato meter, so to speak, doesn't really matter. Like, if this movie gets a 45, I'm like, oh, that's not terrible. I'll watch it. But it got a 62, so you feel a little bit better about watching
it. That's pretty good. And I will say the tomato meter is a hard metric to use, because sometimes a movie can get like a 90%, but everyone is like, it's pretty good. And then sometimes a movie gets a 50%, but half of those people are like, this is the best movie of the year. Yeah. And the other half just didn't like it. So it's always still good. And I'm not just saying that because I write movie reviews, but it's always good to actually read some reviews and find out, you know, more just beyond, you know, the tomato, the metric.
Right. Great point. You mentioned Greenland. Did you see Greenland 2?
I did not, unfortunately. I was hoping to, but I had to catch up with Greenland, the original, because that was supposed to come out in theaters in 2020, and obviously not much came out in theaters in 2020. So I finally got around to it now and was like, that was pretty good. Can't wait to see the new one. And then the new one was gone. So
it was like for a week. That was probably the movie that came out that prevented me from seeing Shelter. And then I wanted to see that one, too, because I saw Greenland. And I had this Gerard Butler kind of prejudice where I was like, he makes this movie about whatever. But, you know, I kind of liked Greenland, so I thought it was a pretty good post-apocalyptic type movie.
Yeah, I think that's on Max, HBO Max right now. If you like disaster movies, it's a really well-done one. It's surprisingly, it's like, what if 2012 was good? You know, what if Roland Emmerich's 2012 or Independence Day was good? Sorry, some people are shocked when I say I don't like Independence Day.
What about, did you see The Rip?
I have not watched The Rip yet. I have a hard time making time to watch Netflix movies. It's like the book that's on your shelf that you're like, I'll get around to reading that. And then you buy a new book and you read that one instead. and it just sits on the shelf. That's like my issue with all Netflix movies. I know it's at home waiting for me. So I have no urgency to get around to it. But I heard it's fun, and I like Affleck. I like Damon. I like Joe Carnahan. He makes good, you know, gritty B-movie pulp, so...
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what you think of that. And what about Train Dreams? I know I've asked you about that. Have you seen that yet?
I am holding out on Train Dreams because all the critics who loved it said that it is a great theatrical experience, and it looks like that's going to be a part of Marcus Theater's Best Picture Showcase.
Nice.
Which normally Netflix movies don't become a part of that, but it looks like both Train Dreams and Frankenstein are going to have screenings as a part of that. So I'm kind of holding out and hoping to see that on the big screen. I'm very excited to check it out. One of the producers did one of my favorite movies last year, Sing Sing. I think Joel Edgerton's a really interesting actor, and it from what I've seen, it looks gorgeous. So I'm really, that's the last of the big Oscar movies I've got to get to. So
I thought so. Okay, that's why I asked. And yeah, that's a great way to describe Joel Edgerton too. It was Train Dreams in the theater? Didn't it have to be in the theaters? Was it like there for a week?
They did the most Netflix movies when they give them a theatrical release. Yeah. It's basically just on the coast. It's basically New York, L.A., maybe like Austin or Miami and Chicago if we're lucky. Rarely do they come to Milwaukee. But, you know, Frankenstein did come here, and I think Netflix, maybe they're trying to, you know, get into theaters to maybe encourage theaters to not hate the Warner Brothers deal. Maybe they're being a little looser now with, you know, putting stuff in theaters, or, you know, maybe they're just tricking us, as they always do.
As they always do. All right, one more. Usually we go over this before the show, but I realized as we started talking, there's a lot of movies I meant to ask you about, and I didn't. Anaconda?
it wasn't my bag. It's not scary enough, and it's not funny enough. I was kind of expecting it to be worse, and I think Paul Rudd and Jack Black and everyone in the movie, Tandoi Newton and Steve Zahn, they're all professionals. They're all going to make you smile at least once or twice. But I think that movie's kind of a, like, okay, either be scarier or be funnier, and it kind of ends up being pretty forgettable. But you know what? I am happy to see a comedy do well at the box office.
Yeah.
Don't look now, but that movie's made like $70 million quietly over the past 2 months. And I think it's made like 200 worldwide for a movie that has forgotten existed. So
it was funny because it was at the Discount Theater up here. My wife and I went, and there was about 10 other people in the theater, and I had a low bar, but I laughed. There was a couple times I laughed, and I thought it was like, I'm not watching that movie at home. So I thought, if we're going to go see this, let's go see it in the theater. And it was fine for what it was. Matt Miller is here,
exactly,
folks.
Exactly the way to phrase it. It's fine.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
That is the highest bar you can give that.
You said it wasn't funny enough or scary enough. My theory on most action comedies is they're not that funny, and the action sucks, and it's not believable. To find a good one is really tough. So, Matt, let's talk about. We're going to do a very short break, and then let's come back. And I would love to hear you tell us what we should kind of keep an eye out for, maybe, if you don't mind.
Would love to.
All right. What else are we doing here? That's why we're here conglomerating here on the radio tonight, folks. Matt Miller is here. We're going to do a very short break. We'll come back, and we'll have a few more minutes, and then we'll wrap this up. It's Pete Schwab and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Guest recommends songs. She's so high. That's just what music does, Matt. It's like you don't realize how great a time you're having until you hear a tune from that era 20 years later. It's such a joke that God puts on us. That's a great song.
Oh, man. I bet you no one had Tal Bachman on their bingo card tonight.
Well, it was great. Zomers is on a 90s kick, so it's been fun. This is Pete Schwab and Nightlight. Matt Miller is here, Milwaukee film critic. We were talking about movies. Boy, Matt, there's a lot of movies opening this weekend, and some that are reviewing pretty well, and a nice array of films opening, different genres.
Yeah, we took last weekend off, apparently, for the Super Bowl, yeah. But there's some fun, interesting stuff coming this weekend. The one I'm most excited about is Good Luck, Have Fun, Don't Die.
Yeah.
Because with a title like that, it's got to be good.
Got to be.
But also, this is the first movie in, I think, like 10 years from Gore Verbinski, who directed the original three Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He directed The Ring. He's just a weird, fascinating director who clearly, like Hollywood isn't ready. Hollywood was like, oh, we like your weirdness. And then he got too weird, and they were like, no. And now he's coming back with this movie with Sam Rockwell, Haley Lou Richardson, really interesting cast. And it's like an anti-AI movie. It is a movie about Sam Rockwell coming from the future to try to get people to rise up against this artificial technology that is like a Terminator type situation. So I'm already in the bag for a premise like that. Rockwell's great. Sam Rockwell working with Gore Verbinski seems like an incredible weirdos combination. I really hope that does well this week, and I'm really excited about that one.
Sam Rockwell, what is it? He's one of those guys that's just got it. People love Sam Rockwell, and he elevates. He's not like he's kind of an A-lister, but not like when it comes to box office. He's one of those guys that if he's in the movie, it adds a certain level of street cred or something.
He's a character actor, and he always brings like back to like Galaxy Quest, you know, stealing scenes in that movie. And he just, I mean, he's maybe the only good part of Iron Man 2. Like he just always brings an energy to a movie, which I think is maybe why it was kind of sad that he got stuck in like Oscar bait land, where after like around Three Billboards, which I think he's fine in Three Billboards. That's not my favorite Oscar win. He kind of got stuck playing like racists and Southerners and George W. Bush and Vice. And like, right. he kind of got stuck in prestige stuff. And it's like, no, man, let Sam Rockwell be weird again. And I'm glad it seems like hopefully he gets to again this weekend.
That's awesome. And you've also got, let's see, there's a kids movie. Oh, you got Wuthering Heights. Crime 101. Wuthering what Heights. Have you heard about that, Matt? Crime 101.
The Crime 101?
Yeah, that's the, is it Chris Helms?
Yeah, that? Hemsworth, Halle Berry, Barry Keoghan.
Or Barry Mark Gill,
Ruffalo. Yeah. Really good cast. I'm interested because the director, I believe his name is Bart Layton.
Yep.
He directed a really good documentary from like 15 years ago called The Imposter, which was kind of like, kind of came up at this time when it came around the same time as Man on Wire, where reenactments and documentary were kind of playing with the idea of reality in them and kind of playing with truth and fiction. And okay. if you haven't seen The Imposter, really good true crime documentary. And so I'm kind of interested what he does with kind of a what looks like a meat and potatoes crime movie like this. I'll watch it. I'm not seeing anything that turns me off of it.
You've got also, we've got about a minute or two left, Matt. Cold Storage. And I bring that up because Joe Keery is everywhere, thanks to Stranger Things and his Chicago song. Another one of those guys, I'm not comparing him to Sam Rockwell, but just has a quality about him people seem to like.
Yeah, if you like Joe Keery, you should see the mockumentary about Pavements that came out last year. Joe Keery plays like a version of the lead singer in the fake biopic they're making in that movie, and he's really funny. He really stands out in that movie. Yeah, this Cold Storage movie is weird because it's also, I believe, written by David Koepp, who wrote Jurassic Park and wrote the upcoming Steven Spielberg Disclosure Day movie. And it's like he wrote Black Bag last year. Like, he is an iconic modern screenwriter, and he's making this Liam Neeson, Joe Keery horror comedy looking thing that it's just like, what was this, David? Did you find this under your, like, is this like a college script that you found? And you were like, I don't know, I guess we could film this. So it's kind of strange that movie exists. I'll see it. It also has, I don't know her name, but the lead actress in that movie was in Barbarian. Before he made Weapons, he made Barbarian. Zach
Georgina Campbell.
Yeah, she's a really good actress, and she picks interesting movies. So I'd be interested to see. You know, it's an interesting, weird mix of movies right now. You know,
yeah.
I don't think the box office is going to be maybe the greatest thing anyone's ever seen, but this is kind of what a healthy cinema world should be like. You know, you've got a swoony romance movie, and you've got a weird horror movie, and you've got a crime movie, and you've got this weird original anti-AI movie. This is what I want,
know? I'm totally with you. And that's all this week. So, yeah, good. Lots of stuff to see, and a lot of stuff is reviewing pretty well, too. Matt, my friend, always fun. Thank you, sir. Can't wait till we can do this again.
Pete, this is always the greatest. Thank you so much for having me.
Back at you. Thanks, sir. Matt Miller, everybody. Check out his work at A Man About Film, Substack. He does outstanding reviews, and he'll tell you, he'll keep you in the loop, especially with what's happening in Milwaukee regarding film, too. A couple more texts here. Craig Anthony Knitt says, The Great Train Robbery, one of the first edited movies. Well done, Craig. And then we've got Bridget on the stream, and the 818 says, The Printing Press, spread knowledge, developed literacy. Well done. All right. Outstanding text tonight, Somers, don't you think?
Absolutely. And a lot of movies I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Yeah, same. Tomorrow night, Rob Thomas, Greg Bach, and Mariah Kohler. Thank you, everybody. On behalf of the multi-talented Aaron Zomers, I'm Pete Schwabo saying good night, Wisconsin.
It's a delicious cheese sandwich. A delicious cheese sandwich.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.